We're in the studio today with Martin Morrow. Welcome, Martin. Thanks for being here with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how long have you been doing stand-up?
Yeah, I started doing open mics and such in 2006 when I was 18. And then I've been, I guess, professionally doing comedy since 2009, where I've been doing improv, sketch, and stand-up. Yeah, I started out as part of a comedy duo in Auburn, Alabama.
One thing I really like about your stand-up is you have a lot of characterization that you add into it. How much do you like to do jokes as yourself versus doing characters on stage and things like that?
I guess I prefer to do jokes myself because I can come from more of a real place, but characters are just, they're fun. I can be silly, I can be goofy, I can come up with something that doesn't have to be my voice or my perspective. If I just want to goof around, I know I can do that by doing like a Farty Marty. If I just feel like, you know, having a really awful rap, I can do that as Marsan. So it's I think that's a big part of coming up with characters.
Sure. And that's a funny video you can check out on your website under the video section, martinmorrowcomedy.com. I like that bit because, there's no audience at all. But you're treating it like it's a live performance or like it's an old late night show, perhaps?
Yeah, it was really silly.
Do you ever bring in some of those elements when you're doing jokes, as you said, sort of more as yourself as opposed to a character?
Oh, yeah, tons of times. I'm a big movie buff. Mm-hmm. And I guess the main one that I do where I can sort of reference a movie and be that character is this scene in RoboCop 3 where this guy named Leon goes to the police station. And I remember I watched RoboCop 3 on demand, and I rewound this scene like 30 times because it was just so hilarious to me. And so I do this character on stage where I pretend to be that guy going through how he just can't just understand that there is a RoboCop and no other types of weird cops. And then they just let it be. Like, that's just him. And then they don't address that happening. It was just a thing they threw in. And it's easily the best scene in any movie because it was so random and so dumb.
That sounds fun. So I'm curious, as far as your performance on stage, would you say you're more presenting jokes as a storyteller, or you feel like you're more performing an act? Is there really a difference for you in that regard?
Not really. I feel like I bring a lot to the table. I do tell some stories. I do tell some jokes. I do tell some perspectives. I do throw in characters, and I do improv on stage a lot too, or a lot of crowd work. So I try to throw in a lot of elements, and just a lot of it is just having fun on stage.
Oh, sure. So where do you like to draw your inspiration from?
My family is a big part of it. Relationships, friends, just weird stories and things that happen to me. A lot of it's from the news or movies or just arguments I get into online, which I shouldn't be doing, but it's fun for me sometimes. Strangers.
Sure.
So yeah, that's where a lot of it comes from.
So as far as like when you're presenting these characters or you're, you know, doing just more of a straight stand-up set, whatever it might be, do you have a lot of times that the audience reacts in a lot of bigger ways or different ways based on whether you're doing character work or whether you're doing specific stand-up?
Yeah, I mean, if the crowd doesn't understand the character, if they think, oh, this is a real person doing this, then it goes a completely different energy versus if this is the crowd that's with characters or with seeing something a little weird or off-putting. So I could do like Farty Marty at Don't Spit the Water or Entertaining Julia, and it'll go fine. But I remember I tried Farty Marty at like Laugh Factory, and it didn't go over well because they were there to see like straight stand-up. So
sure.
Seeing a guy in a leather jacket who keeps saying toot toot and throw towels all over the floor, they're not going to be on board with that because they think, who is this jerk doing all this stuff?
No, I appreciate you saying that because I can certainly understand how that character especially just wouldn't go over well in, you know, certain places. Is that something that you developed in Chicago, or is that something that you've done Farty Marty in other cities all over the country and had different reactions?
No, Farty Marty is a Chicago original. I used to live with this other comic, Danny Callis, and we had sort of a comedy house that we adopted, and we put in these DVDs of all these old school comics from the early 90s and late 80s. And there was one that was a trailer for like the Urban Comics in 1990. And I noticed all of them had like a catchphrase or some sort of like goofy sort of thing, like, you know, Hamburger and Shucky Ducky. And so I was like, I kind of want to create a character like that. And so me and Danny sort of brainstormed, and Farty Marty sort of evolved from there. That was back in 2011.
Sure. Yeah, you know, that's funny. I grew up on a lot of that stuff. For me, comedy was a huge part of my life in the 90s and early 2000s. And yeah, that's spot on. I like that. So I hear you've been doing a lot of traveling. I know you've lived in New York and you're from the South. You're living in Chicago now, and you've spent some time in L.A., right?
Yes.
Is there a particular part of the country that you enjoy more than others? Do you feel like you're getting pulled out west to do more things in L.A., or do you miss being in the New York scene? Is there a particular part of the country that you really enjoy performing in?
I mean, I like them all. They all bring a different element. I feel like L.A., you can be a little bit sillier, depending on where you perform. Like because LA just sort of has two scenes. They have their alt scene and they have like their sort of club mainstream scene. In that club mainstream scene, that's where you're going to see like, oh, this is a big headlining dude, and the crowd is full of models. So I have to do stuff that's going to accommodate to them. Like I did a show out there in November where it was just like a party full of beautiful Persian people. And I was talking about being poor and having to ride the train. And they're like, what are these things? What is poor? I was like, okay, a second of work versus going to that alt scene where I can talk about that stuff. And they're, you know, they're on board with it. New York is very grounded. Like I love New York because it's tough. I like having to work for a laugh or work through a joke and see the turn it makes, but try to bring that energy to get them on board and sort of say, hey, we're both in the struggle together. We're both, you know, living it. And then the Midwest is always awesome because it's just people get comedy, I think, in the Midwest. I think people love to see different elements, and they're going to be very open and honest with you about their laughs. And the South is a different beast. Like Atlanta is a great scene. New Orleans is I love New Orleans. I always recommend people going to check out New Orleans and their comedy scene down there. But there are some like offhand spots where they really want sort of lowest common denominator stuff. So you have to talk about like football and, you know, rednecks, this, that, the other, and that's the stuff they'll like. So I like trying to, figure out each room and play into it. That's very enjoyable for me to do, but I like all spots.
Sure. You know, that's exciting to know. I mean, first off, I completely agree with you. The Midwest, it has not just like that friendly atmosphere, but the fact that people are really open to certain different styles of comedy or different levels. And I can see that that particular club in L.A. Being a rough house. I don't know if Farty Marty would work there or not, but where do you think the comedy scene is going now? It's a lot different in this day and age where, you know, you can kind of promote yourself to huge numbers of people depending on, you know, your YouTube feed or this and that. I mean, your website is amazing, by the way. I love way that it looks. So where do you feel that comedy is going in the future?
I think it's growing. It's growing in a way and taking a step back in a way as well. It's growing in the sense that we're open to a lot of different voices. You know, you have some of the top comics right now are like people like Cameron Esposito, who is a, you know, a lesbian female and she's crushing it. You have like Hannibal Buress, who is like a black guy from the west side of Chicago. Like those are two of the top names touring the country right now. So it's not that sort of gambit of where it used to be of like, here's your standard white guys and here's your urban scene and everything else is sort of sprinkled in with, you know, whatever sort of, I'm a mom from Kentucky sort of thing, which is where it used to be. But I do think that a big battle is trying, not necessarily trying new material, but like trying to develop material that may be risky, that may be scary, and having to not offend people, because we live in more of a hypersensitive era now where people don't like certain things. They don't want to hear certain things. And it could be one trigger word that just sets them off to where they're like, I don't like this joke because I heard that word, even if it's something that's not necessarily making fun of that thing or talking about that thing. But it tends to set people off, and that can create like a weird environment sometimes.
It's interesting you mentioned that on your website, or I should say on the Comedy of Chicago website, you have a post called Hack. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yes.
Well, you talk about using more personal material and how it's important that, you know, your material can be called hack if it's too relevant or it's not relevant enough, and it seems to be kind of a thin line. So how did that affect you when you're trying to write material and you're trying to come up with, you know, your next new joke? You know, what do you want people to take away from what you're trying to put together? And do you spend a lot of time worrying about writing a joke somebody else has written or an idea that somebody else had come up with?
It's interesting. That's actually like something I talked about recently, just sort of a like narrow thinking where a lot of people in the same field have sort of the same, I want to say vision, but where you have a topic you want to discuss, and there's going to be someone who has a similar topic, or they talk about that same topic but a different twist on it, or a twist that's oddly the exact same, but you can't really link it because, like, oh, there's no way this person would know this, or they would know I do this, that, the other. So Tinder would be a good example of that. There, I've heard a million Tinder jokes. I've heard a million Barack Obama impressions, and all of them clearly are unique in their own way, but they're also basically the same because there's only so much you can say about that thing. So in that regard, if I hear someone who has a joke that's too close, I just drop it because I don't want anything to be in the vein of, oh, that this sounds like this person's joke, so it's not going to sound like my voice. I want people to say, oh, that's something Martin Marr would do, and no one else could do that. But you still run into some, you know, certain things, especially like the more you do it and the more broad your jokes become. So like there might be a joke that I do or that I've done for like years, and then next thing you know, like Key and Peele are doing a similar riff on the same thing. It's like, well, I don't want to throw it away because I like that joke, and I was doing it before, but these guys are bigger than me, so I have to figure out a way to change it. So that's the lesson in working out material, and you just try, and if it fails, it fails, and if it works, it works, and hopefully no one has anything like it, or you just have to become a storyteller.
Yeah, I think that's the smart way to do it, too, because if you're a strong comedian, then you should be able to throw a joke away that, in your own standards, is maybe more mediocre now if somebody else has a similar idea. And I would say you are a strong comedian, and that's a good, you know, it's worked for you, so keep it up. So you're coming to Milwaukee. You're going to be recording this show in order to send it off to some networks. You're welcome to say who that is if you so choose, but if you don't want to reveal who that is to jinx it or whatever that might be, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm superstitious. So
yep, no problem.
I'm recording it send it off to some networks and, you know, see what happens from there. And I think I'm doing an audition for them also in January. So,
oh, wonderful.
I'm flying out to LA for that in January. So it'll be the most consecutive, it's not consecutive, but that's the closest. Usually I wait a year to go back to LA, but now I'm waiting like a couple of months. I'm excited to test it out and hopefully just get some good stuff in there and just do my thing, you know?
Sure. That's exciting. I think that's all the questions I have right now. Do you have any?
Actually, I'll just jump on. This is Rachel again. I've just got one quick question. When you were talking earlier about kind of, I guess, political correctness and where the line is for certain audiences, I was just interested if you heard the interview with Chris Rock on Fresh Air.
The one where he talked about that he doesn't perform for colleges anymore?
Right. Yeah. I just found it really interesting how Terry Gross, she couldn't help herself but kind of call out on one particular joke. I didn't hear the full joke that she was referencing, but how, you know, she had some problems with it, thinking that he was gay bashing. But he was like, oh, I came up with this because I had four or five different women come up to me and tell me this kind of a story. And then he used another example of something that, like, she immediately laughed at. And I just thought it was really interesting how, like, she was almost kind of contradicting herself, and she even admitted as much. But I was just kind of curious if you had, along that topic, if you had any thoughts on that interview.
I agree that, you know, like I said, it's weird to have that hypersensitive reality. I guess my personal example is I have this, like, comedy rap group where it's completely satirical and sort of pokes fun at the rap genre and the materialistic era and you know, their approach to relations with women and such. And so we have, like, several really dumb songs. Like, there's one song where we bring a person up on stage, and we usually have it be a female. And, like, the song is us. It's called the birthday song, where it's, the whole premise is, we're singing happy birthday to someone, but we're like also throwing in that we're trying to sleep with him. And that's almost like just 4 minutes of that. But there's one day we got a girl on stage and she seemed on board with it at first. And then after our show, she goes on stage and says, that is not okay. This is misogynistic and this, that, the other. And people started booing her and stuff. And it just became like this big fight outside. And even like the girl's boyfriend jumped in and where he was arguing with us about it. And then our this guy, Michael Ortiz, who's also in our group, he pointed out to the guy that he was actually laughing during it. So it was that sort of dynamic of, like, you can't try to be so hypersensitive to where you build things towards yourself and make it seem like, oh, this offends me because it might offend someone else, but you enjoy it as well. And I think that's the big thing that tends to happen, where we want to bash things because we want to seem like we're okay with everything, we're okay with everything, but we also want to enjoy those things. So it's like saying, like, being it's like a cycle where the most liberal has now become conservative, and conservatives are, you know, the crazy people who comment on YouTube saying mean things to you. So that's the dynamic shift that's happened, I think.
I really appreciate your time. And was there anything else you wanted to add?
All right. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Martin M. Morrow, Instagram M. Morrow Comedy, Facebook / Martin Morrow Comedy, and website martinmorrowcomedy.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and really looking forward to your show at Club Garibaldi.
Thank you.